Let's get into it.
Okay, Scott.
Wow, you called me Scott.
Oh my goodness.
Do you ever call Scott Carl?
Yes. Hi there, I'm Mindy Jensen.
And I'm Carl Jensen.
And this is the Mindy
and Carl
on Money podcast, where we talk about what happens after you reach financial independence.
Why do we call this show Mindy on Money?
I don't know, it was your idea. Something about me being the center of your universe, how you can't stop thinking about me, I walk on water, you can't imagine life without me. Honestly, I stopped listening after a while.
Was I awake or were you awake when you heard these things?
I'm pretty sure you went on and on and on.
I think that might have been a previous boyfriend, but I do think all those things of you.
Of course you do. You have to, right?
What happens if I don't?
You do.
Okay.
We're not going to find out what happens if you don't.
Wow.
On this episode of the Mindy
and Carl
on Money podcast, Carl and I are going to have a real live money date. We are going to get down and dirty with our finances.
Hold up a second. I thought this was a family show.
Oh, stop.
Dirty. But before we get started, let's take a quick break. Today's episode is sponsored by us. Wait, what?
That's right, Carl. Today's episode is sponsored by the Mindy
and Carl
on Money Scholarship Fund. Having just returned from the economy conference, Carl and I are even more in love with the idea of attending in-person FI events. However, if you are just starting on your personal finance journey, on your FI journey, it might be a little financially daunting for you. Even these low-cost FI events can sometimes be unattainable for people. We want to help you attend these events. So please visit mindyonmoney.com/scholarship to find out more information about the scholarship fund. And if you're feeling generous, please visit mindyonmoney.com/scholarship to donate.
Let's get into it.
Okay, Scott.
Wow, you called me Scott.
I meant to say Scott and I, but oh my goodness.
Do you ever call Scott Carl?
Yes.
Wow. What does Scott say to that?
He just laughs.
These will be good outtakes. I wonder what his wife, Virginia, thinks of that.
I wonder if he's ever called her Mindy. I bet he never has because he's so segmented. I'm flighty, so I just make mistakes. Anyway, Scott Trench and I host the Bigger Pockets Money podcast. And way back on episode 157, we did a show called The Money Date, what you should and definitely should not do to align your finances as a couple. And if you go into the show notes on that particular episode, there is a money date template that we designed to help people get on the same page, organize their thoughts, and have a well-prepared money date. So if you are listening to this and this is your first time doing a money date with your partner, or you're thinking about doing a money date with your partner for the first time, or you've had money dates in the past that didn't quite work out, go to the show notes, biggerpockets.com/moneydate157, and scroll down a little bit. You will see a link to the money date template. Click on that, open it up, and take a peek. See how Scott and I organized our thoughts and suggested how you handle your money date together. Also, that's a really great episode. If you're really wanting some advice on how to do a money date, listen to that episode. Scott has some different points of view than Carl does, and that's not really the point of this episode to rehash everything that was already existing on that episode. The point of this episode is to listen as Carl and I have a real live money date.
One point of correction. On our show notes, which I'm looking at, it says Money Show 157 is the URL, and you said Money Date 157.
Oh, crud. Okay, you're right. It is biggerpockets.com/moneyshow157. Thank you so much.
Scott, Carl, date, show. It's easily mixed up. It's a compliment. Scott's a nice man, so I appreciate you. If you got to mix me up with someone, it's better that than like
some troll.
Yeah, I don't want to throw anyone under the...
Some big jerk. So at the beginning of that episode, Scott and I talk about setting the scene. And the absolute worst time to have a money date is when you're not into it, when you're thinking of other things, when you're distracted, when the kids are at your feet, when you're at the end of a really long, frazzled day that came at the end of a long, frazzled week. So you really want to be in the right mindset. Carl and I are in the right mindset to talk about money today. And if you have to postpone your money date because one or both of you are just not feeling it, that's perfectly valid. But you want to set the scene and have clutter-free. You want to have your information. You want to have no kids if you have them. Send them to grandma's. Hire a babysitter. Do something so they're not underfoot, so they're not coming up and interrupting you, because they will. Have a glass of wine if that's what you're into. Set a nice, relaxing mood so you guys can talk about money in a non-confrontational way. I'm only looking at him because he's sitting next to me. We don't talk about money in a confrontational way. But you definitely want this to be a non-confrontational way, especially if you're trying to have a money date for the first time and one of you is way more on board than the other.
Am I supposed to say something here?
Well, this is a back and forth. This isn't a monologue.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a monologue.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do dominate.
It's... Does Scott get this treatment as well? Or...
It depends. Sometimes we go back and forth. Sometimes he's more domineering of the show, and sometimes I'm more domineering of the show.
Yeah. Well, I agree with everything you said. One place we like to talk about money, a couple things I'll throw out there. We like to go for long walks and talk about money just around our neighborhood. Sometimes we'll walk downtown. And another one, sometimes we'll go to a local watering hole like Shoes and Brews. Shout out to Shoes and Brews, and have a drink there, look at shoes, have a beer, and talk about money.
Yeah, when you said one place we like to talk about money, I'm like, what, Earth? We talk about money all the time. It doesn't matter where we are. We're talking about money.
Pretty much.
Okay, so this is a serious conversation, even though Carl and I don't seem like we're having a serious conversation. We actually are. Right?
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear. Yes, happy wife, happy life. Shout out to Chris and Heather, who we met recently this weekend at the MMM HQ co-working space meetup. And he said that. He said, oh, my wife is happy. Happy wife, happy life. Hmm. Anyway. Yeah. What do you mean, yeah? Anyway. You need to be prepared for your money date. And that means having all the information available. So you're looking at essentially four things. Your income, your expenses, your assets, and your debts or liabilities. These are facts. These are not opinions. It is not your opinion that you have a $10,000 credit card balance. That is a fact. So facts should be treated as black and white statements. However, there can be some animosity, especially if the reason that you have a $10,000 credit card statement is because your partner spent a bunch of money either on purpose or on accident, or maybe even out of malice. If you want to have a successful money date, you have to put that aside and just deal in facts. So these four facts are the things that you need to have at your hands, at your fingertips, ready to go. And then you need to have some opinions. Your opinions are also called goals. You need to have your goals. What are your year goals? What are your monthly goals? What are your spending goals? What are your investing goals? What are your giving goals? And these can vary every month. You don't have to cover every single topic every single time, but these are the things, especially for your first money date, you're going to need to have handy. We have these fairly handy, and we're going to discuss ours today.
We are?
Yes, I talked to you about this. Oh, my goodness.
Sounds great.
Okay. So, Carl, what is a money date?
A money date is a date where you talk about money.
You see what I'm dealing with?
We're going to review all of those numbers and make sure we're on the same page with our spending, with our plans for spending, basically make sure our hopes and dreams are aligned.
Okay. And what is a money date not?
Money date is not where you don't talk about money.
Oh my!
I didn't know this would be a quiz. A money date isn't confrontational. We're not there to accuse our partner or get mad or any of that. And the real purpose of it is to avoid all of that in the future. If you can talk about money and make sure you're aligned, hopefully you can live a happier life. Like the whole point of having money and getting that straight is so you don't have to think about money, so you can move on and do other better things, but you still have to talk about it every once in a while. So this whole money date is kind of a little bit of a necessary evil thing in life for most people. Like we enjoy it, but most people might not.
Yeah, I think we're weirdos when it comes to that. And you might be the weirdo who enjoys talking about money, enjoys seeing money, enjoys, well, everybody enjoys seeing money, enjoys seeing your money grow and looking at your finances and looking at your investments and blah, blah, blah. But if your partner isn't on board, at least giving them a state of your financial union address is going to be really, really helpful. And the more you talk about money, the easier it gets to talk about money. Okay, I think that's enough preamble. Let's jump in.
Cool, let's do it.
Okay. So in our relationship, I am perfectly content to continue to put money into our retirement accounts and never look at it. Put it into the investment accounts and never look at the balance. And I married my exact opposite. Carl is perfectly content to continue to put money into these accounts and then obsessively look at it every single day. Do you think that's an accurate characterization?
I do think so.
Yes. Okay. Moving on. We're both fine with this because he really enjoys it. Do you feel compelled to look at this? Do you feel obligated to look at it because I don't? Or is that just something you want to do anyway?
It is entertainment for me. I like watching the stock market. I like seeing how business is going. I like the state of the economy. Like some people like to watch sitcoms. I like to watch my stock prices.
In other words, he's obsessed.
Now, with that in mind, I very, very, very rarely do anything about anything. I don't freak out when everything goes bad, or I don't go crazy when things go up. It is just a form of entertainment.
Oh, I disagree completely.
Whoa.
You will come to me. Did you see the stock market today? Nope. I don't know why he asked me this. The answer is always the same. Nope. I didn't see it. What happened? And it's either it was up 5,000 points or it was down 5,000 points. Or usually it's Tesla was crashing or Tesla was up 100 points.
Tesla the car or Tesla the stock?
Tesla the stock.
Okay, good. Yeah, let's not crash a car.
Oh, my goodness. So done with you. So anyway, no, I don't care what happens to the stock market because I would like to reiterate that it isn't that I don't care. I have a strong belief in the financial viability of the American stock market. So I believe that it will go up and to the right. Not always. Sometimes we have down days. But if you look at it every single day, you could start to freak out about that. Some people do. Most people do. Carl's probably the only one who doesn't, which is fine. If you find yourself freaking out about down days, don't look at the stock market so frequently. Okay. Our money date consists of talking about spending. So investments and assets, and we don't have any debts outside of our mortgage. So that's a real easy conversation. Hey, do we still have a mortgage?
Yes.
Okay, covered. Are we still paying off our credit cards every month?
Yep.
Okay, the end. That takes care of debts. Let's talk about income. Income has been a little fluctuatious this year. I haven't sold any houses. I am a real estate agent, which is very fluctuating income. Carl is unemployed or retired, as some people say.
I'm fun-ployed. I still work. It's just I don't make the kind of money you did. And I want to back up a second. You said a word that I had never heard of, and I want to know if I'm just an idiot or if you know some word that I don't. You said fluctuatious?
Yes. You can make up words as long as you use them in the sentence and people understand what you're saying. You can make them up.
Okay. So I'm not an idiot. You just made up that word.
I made up that word.
Okay. Great. Be fluctuatious. Yeah, we'll edit this out.
No, leave that in.
You look fluctuous today.
That's not the right way to use the word.
You just made it up. I can use it anytime I want. So your income is down a little bit because you're not doing any real estate transactions this year so far.
Down a little bit. My income is way down because I didn't do any real estate transactions so far. If you're looking to buy a house in Longmont, Colorado, I'd love to help you. Email MindySellsCO@gmail.com or Mindy@MindyOutMoney.com and I'll connect you either way.
But you do still make some money from your Bigger Pockets gig, and I make some money from my blogging gig.
Yes. So our income is enough for us to live on.
Barely.
Barely. Because we're spending quite a bit of money on home improvements.
Yeah. And actually, our income is not enough for us to live on with these home improvements. So we're going to have to cash out some stocks or find some other way to make some money. Like you saw a house, which would be nice.
You could get a job.
I could. Well,
I like how I already have a job and you're like, well, you could use more money. You could make more money.
That was a compliment for you. You have more skills. Like I've got no skills left. I can barely get out of bed and you're like a podcaster and all this other stuff. And
yeah. Super famous.
Yeah,
so
you're fluctuous.
I am fluctuous in my income. So I need to fluctuate up with my income before anybody sends Carl a nasty email at carl@mindyonmoney.com. I would like to say that this is mostly a joke, but as a real estate agent, I have the ability to generate some pretty big dollars just by selling one or two houses with very little time put into it.
Yeah, just what you said. It might not take a long time, especially if you're listing a house. There's not a whole, it's not, it could be hundreds or thousands of dollars an hour.
Yes. As opposed to if Carl were to go out and generate that same level of income, he would actually have to go and get a job, right?
Yeah. I think I make like $3 or $4 an hour from the blog. I'm not even like half of what minimum wage is. But, but I enjoy it and do it for free. So is it a job?
Ugh. Vomit.
Okay. Well, let's talk about our actual expenses. Above and beyond what we normally spend money on, like food and heat and all that.
So we alluded to home improvements. We moved into this house knowing that it would need a lot of work. And we haven't finished it yet 4 years later. Yay.
4.5 years. But who's counting?
Who's counting? Clearly you are. So one of the biggest projects left is the fence.
Yes, the fence was already in sorry shape, and a windstorm the other night confirmed it when it blew a 16-foot portion of our fence into our neighbor's garden.
Yay!
The fence couldn't last another month when I had planned to do it, so I'm ordering parts after I get off this call. Yay, Lifetime Steel Post people. They'll be in cement. This shouldn't happen again. But I calculated all the expenses for the fence are going to be about $3,000, and then I'm going to hire a couple friends to help out. So I expect this 160-foot length of fence to cost probably around $6,000 by the time we're all done with it.
Okay. We are also replacing the railing in our house. The railing that came with the house when we bought it is not up to current code. The house was built in 1979, and the railing code says that the balusters need to be 4 inches on center apart. And that's to keep babies from falling through it. And these were what, like 8? They were huge.
Yeah, they're wide. You could drive a truck through them.
Yeah. Daphne actually slipped through them. She did it on purpose. She didn't like injure herself. But we have friends with babies and it's just not safe to have a 2-story railing be so open to the downstairs. Also, conveniently, ugly as sin. So it was very easy to get rid of that. We are hiring out someone to come and create a custom metal railing. How much is that going to cost?
He is doing a railing for the upstairs, the downstairs, doing a fireplace, mantel wrap, and also a little mini railing for the loft area I built. And overall, this is going to be about $4,000.
Yep. So that is going to come out of pocket, probably all going to hit in the same month. That's $10,000 above our regular spending.
Yeah, oof.
Yeah, oof is right. Spending in general is up a little bit. If you caught our episode with Ramit Sethi on his I Will Teach You to Be Rich podcast, you have heard us trying to loosen our purse string. So we aren't keeping such a super tight tab on where everything is going, although we are trying not to be wasteful with our spending and spend on things that don't bring us joy. So we're going out to dinner a little bit more often, but we're not, I don't think we're doing anything extravagant. I mean, you bought two cars last year.
I bought two cars?
Well, I didn't buy them. Well, I guess I did. I'm the one with the job.
Yeah. Thank you for two cars. This year is going to be a lot tamer. Last year, we went to Hawaii and went on a helicopter. What other crazy stuff? Oh, we went to New York City and went and saw some shows. This year, what is our big trip?
This year, our big trip is a cruise to Alaska. But it's not just us and our two children. It is also Carl's mother, Carl's sister and her husband, and Carl's other sister and her boyfriend.
And we paid for it all, just as a nice thing to do for the family. Thank you, Ramit, for that inspiration. We are going to do that in June, and that will probably be the last of our big expenses. And what did all that come out to? Like maybe $14,000, I think? That's a big number.
Oh, about $14,000,
$15,000,
$16,000. Yeah. And I can't remember.
We're going to road trip it out there, which will be fun. I've got some referral credits from the Tesla program, so we won't have to pay for electrons.
Ooh.
So fuel cars use gas, EVs use electrons.
Nice. And if you'd like more information about purchasing your own Tesla, you can go to mindyonmoney.com/Tesla. And Carl will give you all sorts of information. And then also there's a link there that you can use to purchase a Tesla under our referral. And then we get points and it doesn't cost you anything extra.
What do you think about electrons? Are you positive or negative on them?
Oh, my God. This is a nerd joke. I don't even know. I think I'm positive.
Oh, electrons are negative.
Ugh.
Protons are positive. P for positive.
Oh, okay.
What are neutrons?
Neutral.
Neutral. Very good. Okay.
You knew I didn't know the answer to that one.
I didn't know. I thought you did. You're fluctuous.
I'm fluctuous with my electron knowledge.
Our next episode is going to be all about electrons.
No, it isn't. Nobody's going to listen to that.
They're great.
Yeah, okay. Release that on your own show.
They make the car go. Okay.
Yeah, so why wouldn't I be positive about electrons?
You should be positive about their negativity.
I'm positive that people are going to turn this podcast off.
I know. Is anyone still listening?
No.
If I could give it negative electrons on Apple reviews, I would. No. Please don't do that. We're sensitive.
Okay. We have attended Economy. We have already gone on, well, half of us have already gone on two cruises. One of us has only gone on one cruise this year. And despite that, we're really not cruise people, even though I'm going on three cruises this year. You're going on two cruises this year. But we have done a lot of kind of expensive travel. You're going to Germany.
Yes.
We're going to Cancun for the Bigger Pockets Conference in October. And we're going to FinCon. I'm going to Podcast Movement. What else? Oh, Camp Fi, Rocky Mountain, maybe another Camp Fi, depending on our schedules. Lots of travel, but it's fun travel.
Yeah. And my Germany friends told me I had to buy lederhosen for my Germany adventures.
That'll be a super cute look. Borrow Jake's.
I'll probably come out wearing it and they'll all just have like jeans and t-shirts on. They're probably doing it to make me look like a fool. Bob, if you're listening.
Bob, if you're listening, definitely make him buy that. Okay, back to this. Now we have an opportunity to lend money to a friend who is doing real estate stuff. We have decided that we are not going to be doing any more live-in flips ourselves. And right now, rental properties in our area don't make a lot of sense. And we're super busy. And we have decided that while we like real estate, we don't want to do it personally right now. But we have a friend who is getting ready to buy a property and needs to borrow some money. And we can make a really good return, by lending money to people who are doing real estate deals. So please don't email us. We don't have any money for people that we don't know. But we have an opportunity to invest with a friend. What are you thinking about that?
I'm feeling good about it. These loans are pretty tricky because if someone is really, really, really good with real estate and has experience, and I'm thinking of Chad Carson here, who's brilliant and a super nice guy to boot, that guy is never going to ask me for money because he doesn't need it. He is already completely set. On the other hand, if you know someone who's never done a deal, how willing are you going to be to give them a big chunk of money? They've got no experience, but they're the ones who need the money the most. In my opinion, the sweet spot for these deals are people in the middle who have some experience, who have demonstrated good knowledge, especially in an area that they live in. I don't want someone doing like an out-of-state deal. I want someone who's doing a deal local to them because they really know the market, but they haven't quite reached escape velocity yet, where they're just have tons of money and have people willing to throw money at them like banks. So they might have a little bit of trouble getting conventional funding. Hence, they come to someone like us who have some extra cash and can lend the money. We do this through a self-directed solo 401k. So it's tax sheltered for now until we take the money out. But all the interest-only monthly payments at 12% will all be tax-free for now. So I like doing this a lot. It helps them and it helps us too.
Yep. I like this. I like this particular friend who is doing this deal. And the deal that they're doing is something they have experience in. So this is another thing that we look for when we're lending money to friends only. Again, don't email us. We don't have any money to lend out to people that we don't know. I get a lot of emails from people at my Bigger Pockets email address asking me for money.
I think a couple of those were from me. So you can just, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but yeah, I wanted to.
I tell everybody no. Yeah, no, I tell everybody no, because this is my money and I'm going to lend it safely. If you're interested in learning more about lending to real estate investors, Bigger Pockets Publishing has a book called Lend to Live, and it's available in their bookstore. You can go to biggerpockets.com/store and check out their book. You might even be able to go to biggerpockets.com/lend to live, but I can't remember if that URL actually works or not.
Okay. And who wrote that book?
That book is written by Alexander Brashears and Beth Pinkley Johnson.
Sounds great. We'll put a link in the show notes. Cool. So can you buy me that Lamborghini I asked for when I sent you the email asking for money? Or
no.
Okay. It was the cheaper one.
Why do you keep asking for a Lamborghini? They're not even all that reliable.
I don't know. Yeah, I really don't want that. But if someone wants, like a Countach, I saw that at the Peterson. It was beautiful. Man.
Is that the one with the scissor doors?
Yeah, the old school 80s one that every teenage boy had a poster of.
1980s.
No, it looks cool.
Oh, we're not getting a Lamborghini.
It's the wedge shape, like the Lotus Esprit.
I know what it looks like.
The DeLorean, like the Tesla, is the evolutionary descendant of all these vehicles. It's like if they all got together and produced offspring, the Countach, the DeLorean, and the Lotus Esprit had a baby, and the baby was like supersized, it would be the Cybertruck.
Well, if they didn't stop listening on the Electron thing, they sure stopped listening now.
I didn't say it was a pretty baby.
No good, because it's not.
No.
Okay, so now we're going to move into investments.
Oh, this is an interesting one. I'd like to give a little bit of background very quickly. We're huge believers in index funds, right? You like index funds. I like index funds.
I do.
I love VTSEX. VTSAX.
Was that a Freudian slip?
It was a fluctuatious slip. But I didn't know what an index fund was until 2014. So before that, we bought stocks. Individual stocks. But fortunately, we brought the right ones and held on to them. I was a nerd. I was looking at this morning. Yeah, still I'm a nerd. We have 200 baggers in our portfolio, which means the stock is 100x what it IPO'd at. Tesla's one, and I'm pretty sure Alphabet is the other one, which is also Google because we bought it at IPO time. We still have all these stocks, and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. If you've seen any of Elon Musk's antics, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I finally figured out how we're going to get rid of them. Did you read my blog post on this that I dedicated to you?
No, I didn't.
Okay, good, because I didn't actually dedicate it to you.
I was going to say, wow, thanks for making me look like a jerk.
I call it the reverse index fund. So what I want to do is just sell equal amounts of our stocks off every year and probably pretty small amounts until we have no income and we need the money to live on. Like if you want to buy me the Lamborghini, we'll have to sell a little bit more, but we'll sell maybe 1 or 2% of everything just in equal amounts. And that's how we'll get rid of our portfolio. That acknowledges that we don't know who the big winners or losers are going to be. Just like an index fund, you don't know who's going to win, who's going to lose. And that's the whole point of buying an index fund. So we will get rid of our stocks in the exact same way, just in reverse. Does that make sense?
Yes, but this is where we have quite the conundrum. The stocks are still doing well. Do you believe in the strength of Alphabet?
Yes.
So why would you want to sell it?
Well, like I said, it'll be in very small amounts. We'll probably sell 1% of it every year. And just because I believe in it doesn't mean that I'll be right. Like, I don't know if you would have asked me how RIM or BlackBerry, whatever that company is, was doing before the iPhone came out. I might have thought it was doing great.
It was.
Yeah, you never know when today's behemoth market leader is going to be a shadow of itself and be destroyed by some new development. All this AI stuff that's coming online now is really, really interesting. I think it's going to change a lot of things, and a lot of businesses are going to be disrupted in either a really good way or a really bad way. And Google might be one of them. If someone comes up with a really good version of search that uses AI to find results, that could be a lot better than Google, and Google's main cash cow could be done overnight. They are an advertising company. They make all their money, or most of it, from people doing searches and finding products, but AI will eventually do that a lot better. But Google has big AI investments as well.
So is 1% enough to sell every year? It'll take us 100 years to sell it. Even more than that, because 1% this year, we're not selling 1%, and now we have 99%, and the next year we'll have 98%. We'll sell 1% of it next year, and that's a smaller amount.
And that's the hope. If everything goes well, we'll never get rid of these, and they'll continue to grow. The reason I just said 1% is because you still have some income. Like, you have enough income to fund all of our basic needs. You can buy our milk and cheese, pay our mortgage. We don't have to buy electrons because we have solar panels, which is great. I'm very positive about that.
So done with you.
So your money covers our basic needs. I don't want to sell anything unless we have to. We'll have to do a little bit this year to pay for that railing and the fence and our fancy cruise. But yeah, I don't want to sell before it's time. I know my biggest investing mistakes, our biggest investing mistakes, haven't really been buying the right company. It's selling the right company before it's time, like getting rid of Apple in 2017. That wasn't such a great move.
But now you're trying to get rid of it anyway.
Well, we don't have Apple right now, but...
We don't have any Apple?
No. Well, Apple's the biggest or second biggest company in the world. Microsoft and them compete with each other. But we do own... I do like VTSAX a lot, but sometimes we also buy index-heavy index funds, like the Qs are the top 100 holdings in the NASDAQ. So if you own that, you already own, like, I think that owns, it's like 20% Apple.
Yes, but I thought we had actual Apple stock.
We do not.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should look at this every once in a while.
Yes. It's a fluctuous situation.
And I will say that he does talk to me about this before he makes these moves. I just don't always remember.
Yeah. Yeah, stocks. If you have all these individual stocks, I think they're about a third of our portfolio. You got to spend a lot of time thinking about them and considering them, even if you don't want to, because you don't want to ride that boat down. Tesla's a great example. Up until recently, they couldn't make enough cars. Their problem wasn't to demand one, and now it is. Now they can't move cars, and it's debatable why that's happening. We don't need to go into that because I don't think anyone cares. But the situation has changed very quickly.
Do you think it's a long-term problem?
No.
Okay. One of our goals this year is to give more. And we've started with the scholarship fund. And the first recipient of the scholarship fund donations is Dan Sheik's group with a little apostrophe after the S. Dan Sheik's runs a group called Sheik's Freaks, where he talks to high school and college age kids about the concept of financial independence, mainly through real estate and stock market investing. And he's doing really great work with these kids. And I say kids, even though some of them are actually adults, although some of them are still high school kids. But they're significantly younger than I am, which is why I call them kids. And these young people are doing some really amazing, impressive things. And you remember back when you were in high school and college, you didn't have a lot of money. And attending Camp Phi really isn't that expensive. It's about $500 for a ticket to go to Camp Phi. And if you need to fly there, it's maybe $250, $350 on Southwest, if that's your airline of choice. It's my airline of choice to get there. So $750, $850 to get you to and from Camp Phi and attend for an entire weekend. And this kind of event can really be life-changing, but only if you actually go. So we are helping Dan raise up to $15,000 to send his group to Camp Phi, Texas. So that is the first thing that we're doing with the giving, and we're hoping to be able to do a lot more.
Yeah, super cool. I love being generous in this way. My dream is for one of these kids to come back to us in 10 or 20 years and say, hey, you sent me to that Camp Phi, and either I met so-and-so and they gave me this incredible knowledge, or I saw this presentation and it was an inflection point in my life. And it's all because I was able to go to this thing. So we really look forward to helping some people out with these events. I think we'll probably do Economy for 2025, because that's such a great conference. We love going to it. Camp Phi, maybe even a FinCon if people want to get into content creation.
Yeah, lots of possibilities. So stay tuned. Towards the end of 2024, we'll start talking about the Economy Conference. And you can always check in at mindyonmoney.com/scholarship to check out what we are supporting and what we are promoting at that time.
Cool. Should we talk about what we're talking about on the next episode? Because I'm super looking forward to this one.
Next week, Carl, sweetheart, darling, I am going to recap my time on a cruise boat without you.
Did you enjoy going without me?
I did. Of course, I missed you. Oh, goodness, I miss you so much.
I'll bet you thought about me at least once every other day, right? Maybe.
I thought about you at least once.
Ah, okay.
Remember that one time that I was able to call you?
It's better than zero, I guess.
No, I thought about you all the time. I wish you were there, and you'll be there next time. Okay, so I went on this cruise with Amberly Grant, who runs a program called FinTalks, and she decided that she wanted to get together a bunch of the people that attend her FinTalks every week and go on a cruise. So she organized the whole thing. And then what's really great about it is it's on a cruise boat. We left from Galveston, Texas. We floated down to parts of Mexico. And there were 65 of us on this inaugural cruise. What makes that super awesome is that there was always something to do. We were on the Royal Caribbean Cruise Line, and we had such a fantastic time. Next week, I'm going to tell you in great detail how awesome it was, how you can go on next year's cruise in January or February of 2025. She's still working out all the details, but if you want to get on her mailing list to keep up with all the information when she's sending it out, go to amberlygrant.com/cruise. That's amberlygrant.com/cruise.
But I think the most interesting part of this episode is going to be some of the hate mail that people like Amberly, Amy Minkley, Diana, have received about their events. And I won't go into it now, but we're going to talk a little bit about why we think, even though these events cost some money, why they're completely worth it.
Yeah, I've made lifelong friends at every event that I've attended.
Okay, that was supposed to be a spoiler. You just spoiled it.
Oh, well, okay. Then edit the part out.
There goes the cliffhanger. I'm not going to edit it out.
You can edit it out.
It's more work for me.
Oh,
if I had to edit out every fluctuations you said, I'd be there all day.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you can email carl@mindyonmoney.com and tell him how fluctuations is now your new favorite word. Feel free to spell it any way you want.
We should start using it. Then it can be the like the new Oxford word that they add to the dictionary at the end of the year.
Oh, that is my new bucket list item, to be able to create a word that gets into the Oxford dictionary as the word of the year. Fluctuations has my vote.
Mine too.
Thank you for watching. And please go to our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/MindyOnMoney.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.